Welcome back to the Rethink Your Lifestyle podcast. I'm your host, Michelle Boyd Waters. In this week's episode, former secondary level business teacher, De'Ara Bennett, and I discuss how to start a thriving copywriting business. English teachers, this one is for you. You've honed the writing chops to pull this off, and De'Ara is sharing the business advice you need. We'll start this interview in just a few minutes.
Are you ready to take control of your life? Then you've come to the right place. The Rethink Your Lifestyle podcast is here to help entrepreneurs like you start, grow, and scale the online business you love. Join host Michelle Waters as she shares her journey from the classroom to the freedom of being her own boss. She'll interview inspiring entrepreneurs and share tips and insights along the way. All right, without any further ado, let's get this show started.
Welcome back to Rethink Your Lifestyle. I'm your host, Michelle Boyd Waters, and I am here today with De'Ara Bennett. I am so glad to have you here.
Thanks. It's happy to be here.
I'm glad to hear that. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and what you've done to rethink your lifestyle?
I am a former teacher. I taught business, marketing, career development, personal finance, and some technology courses to 6th through 12th grade students. And I did that for 4 years until I had my son March 2021 and left for maternity leave. I only returned for 2 days at the end of the school year. So I basically left the classroom in March 2021. Prior to that, I was a writing tutor for college students, where I also taught writing workshops to help them improve their grammar, punctuation, spelling, and just total composition. I taught some marketing courses for an influencer's business boot camp. That was definitely a different kind of experience working with an influencer to do that to help other female entrepreneurs.
Excellent. And so you kind of had, so moving out of the classroom and into an entrepreneurial role was kind of something that you were familiar with then.
Right. Because I had helped so many of my students, even my middle school students, start businesses that they're still running today.
Oh, wow. So
I always wanted to run my own. I felt like that would give me a chance to apply everything that I learned and that I had been teaching and see how it works for myself. And so I recently started my copywriting business as well as resume writing. They're kind of combined right now, doing them under the same name, but I'm enjoying it so far.
So for those teachers who are still in the classroom, let me back up just a minute. Your story sounds a little bit like mine. I had my son in March, but it was 2000, so a long time ago. And I realized for me, you know, and I'd been a writer before that, I realized that the 2-to-10 shift on the newspaper wasn't going to work well with having a young child at home. And so I decided to stay home. And in my case, I started a web design and hosting company about a year later and ran that business. And then, you know, ended up being a teacher, did that for about 10 years. And then over the summer, a former student asked me to help him and his business partner set up their business. And while I'm sitting there helping them set up their business, and I was there thinking, man, I wish I could do this too. And then as of December, ended up doing that. Can you talk to me about kind of the emotional journey that you took from being in the classroom to being where you're at now?
For me, it actually worked out really well. With me teaching 6th through 12th grade, I had an elective course. I had a lot of students for multiple years. And so my first year teaching, I taught every 9th grader at the school. And like I said, I taught for 4 years and I became their class advisor. So my last year teaching was their last year of high school. And that worked out perfectly for me because that was the group that I had the most attachment to. And so when they were graduating, it's like, I was graduating into the next phase of my life as well. And I talked to them about that. They were saying they don't know what they want to do next. And I said, I understand because I don't know what I want to do next either.
Yeah.
And so it showed my students, you know, your teachers are human too. We don't have it all figured out. And just because you do something for a little while doesn't mean that you have to do that for forever. I think with teaching in particular, a lot of teachers are kind of made to feel like this is your purpose, this is your calling. You're supposed to stay here forever, retire after 30 years. And in other career fields, that's not necessarily the case, except maybe.
Nope, that's not the way the world works.
Right. So maybe a doctor, because you put so much time into it. But typically, you know, people switch companies, they switch career fields, and it's not a huge deal. So to answer the question that you asked, emotionally, it was easier for me because my group that I was the closest to, they were moving on anyway.
And that's one thing that I discovered as a teacher is that you have to say goodbye. And that is so hard for me. That is so emotionally hard. And I had no idea, and no teacher ever had said, hey, by the way, you're going to have to say goodbye to people every single year. Right. And it's like, hey, nobody warned me of this.
Exactly.
So another thing I heard you mention is that you have to be able to shift, to adjust, for lack of a better term, to pivot. And as a teacher, we do that all the time. You go in, you have this great lesson plan, and you present it to the kids, and they look at you like, what? And you realize, I have to completely change that. It's the same way in business. That ability to shift, and sometimes on the fly, is so important because, you know, there are times when you put out an advertisement on Facebook or Instagram, or you put up an offer page and you get crickets, you have to be able to think, okay, now what do I need to do differently? What research do I need to do to find out why this didn't work and make that happen?
Right.
Or, you know, maybe you put something out there and it's hugely successful. Everybody buys it, but then, you know, crickets start chirping after a few years and you have to decide, okay, what's next?
Exactly.
So what led you to resume writing and copywriting in particular?
I went to school for marketing, and like I said, that's part of what I taught, and it was my favorite class to teach. Copywriting made sense for me because it deals with marketing, which I love. It deals with writing, which I love. It just felt like the perfect combination, and I decided that I wanted to do copywriting for ed tech companies, but originally, I said, I'm going to do copywriting for everyone, and that goes against everything you learn in marketing, because your target market is never everybody, but I just felt like, okay, I'm a stay-at-home mom. I need to make some money. I don't want to turn down any money. I'll just market to small businesses. That wasn't the best decision because they don't necessarily have the money always. Since they're smaller businesses or newer businesses, they might not understand the value of professional copywriting. And I realized I would be spending a lot of time trying to convince companies of my worth if I targeted businesses that were on the smaller side. Whereas with companies that deal with tech, they might have funding from investors, or they might have worked with freelancers in the past, so they understand, okay, this is just how much things cost. If you want quality, this is how much it's going to be. So it took me a while to figure out who I wanted to target, but now that I have, I'm definitely looking forward to working with more ed tech companies. As far as resume writing goes, that's not something that I set out to do. I just started writing a few resumes for people who asked, and I just put out a price, definitely lower than what I should have been charging.
But you'd always raise your prices.
Right, which I did. That's kind of the conflict area because I am dealing with teachers. And so I don't want to feel like I'm taking a teacher's paycheck. But at the same time, it takes hours of research and time to write these resumes and cover letters and LinkedIn profiles. And, you know, as a teacher, your time isn't really valued by the employer.
Right.
You're kind of made to feel bad if you say no to doing things that are outside of your contract hours. And so you're not really taught to value your time. You're conditioned to do things for free just because you want to or because of pressure.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so,
because the kids need it.
Exactly. And so it's definitely a mentality shift. And this is even with me going to school for business, marketing, and management. It was still a mentality shift that how can I want teachers to value their time and not encourage them to leave the classroom, but encourage them to pursue the kind of opportunities where their employers will value their time? How can I do that when I don't even value my own time? How can I teach them that their time is valuable if I'm giving away items for free or completely undervaluing them? I try to tell teachers to think about your time as your most valuable resource versus your money. Because if you're spending 3 weeks writing a resume, what else could you have been doing in those 3 weeks that have been more worth your time versus paying someone else to do it for you? And you have this time to spend with your family, to spend on the job search, to spend on upskilling and things like that. I know I went all around your question. As far as why I do the resume writing, it really is to help teachers because I understand what it's like to be a teacher. I understand the role of a teacher, the roles that someone who's never been a teacher won't understand. But I also understand how to translate experiences into corporate language because that is also my background.
That's kind of goes back to another mindset issue. is teachers are, you know, wear all of these hats, are capable of doing all of these things, have all of these what we call soft skills. And then they come into a Facebook group and say, I don't know what I can do outside the classroom. And so you're kind of a career counselor, too, it sounds like, and that you've got to shift their mindset so that they can see, or at least on paper anyway, so that they can see that the skills they have are valuable in a different environment. Right. And then once you've done that and you've put that LinkedIn profile together or written out the paper resume, then, you know, you've put together something that will actually earn them money in the long run in the form of a probably higher paying job.
Right, exactly. And that's what I want teachers to understand. You're not wasting money. You're saving time and you're investing money. Yes, because if you get a $30,000 increase for a $200 resume, or not for a $200 resume, but you spend $200 on a resume that gets you an interview for a job that pays $30,000, you're not going to remember that $200.
Yeah, that $30,000 more, you're like, hey.
Exactly, that's money. That's money well spent versus, you know, you spend 3 weeks on the resume and it's still not good because you were balancing home life and balancing work life and trying to look for jobs. And so you couldn't fully commit and you were, you know, reading every post on LinkedIn and got confused and just tried to throw it all in there. So, you know, you spend all that time and for what? It's still not getting noticed.
And we often have kind of emotional connections or attachments to things like our resume, because that's our life story. That's who we are. And so that sometimes blinds us to what we need to be seeing in order to make it someone else's.
Exactly. That's why if I ever have to do a resume again, I'm paying somebody to do mine, because even though I know how to do it, that objective look at your history is so necessary, because we either think everything we did was super important and impressive, or we think nothing we did was important or impressive. It's really like no in between. And so somebody can look at everything you did and say, okay, this is impressive. This, it's good, but it's not relevant to this job. That's something that I feel like anybody can use, even people who are resume writers.
Sometimes looking at your own stuff, you just, you know, you can't see the forest for the trees. And so, you know, I might look at my own resume and think this is important and that is important. But if I were applying for a job, that particular employer or the people in that particular industry might have something else that they're looking at that you know from, you know, your connections within that industry.
Right, exactly.
Another thing that you said a few minutes ago, you were talking about how you had wanted to target teachers for, you know, copywriting or small businesses for copywriting. And then you realized that the money really wasn't there. And so you needed to, or you kind of switched to ed tech companies in particular, because they would have investors. I think that's an important thing to realize, too, is that you need to also go where the people have money or can afford to purchase what you're offering.
Right, exactly. And that just goes into identifying your target market and, you know, creating that buyer persona so that you can know, okay, for example, with the resume services, I am targeting teachers. I probably won't do too well if I charge $600 for a resume, whereas I see other resume writers, they're charging $600 and they're getting clients, but they're targeting executives. So you just kind of have to know, like, we're both doing the work. We're both creating these resumes, but because I chose a target market that tends to have a lower household income than executives, I have to charge less than what I would charge to executives.
Talking about our target markets, and, you know, you've got to be able to know who your target market is. How do you go about finding them?
Like I said, as far as targeting teachers with resumes, it really is because I want to help teachers. I charge the bare minimum to be able to help but still be compensated for my time versus, you know, just trying to make as much money as I can. That's not my main thing. I'm passionate about helping teachers, but I'm not just passionate about writing resumes. That's what I want to do for the rest of my life. So as far as finding clients, I find all of my clients on LinkedIn. I don't advertise. I don't make posts saying, hey, I write resumes for this much. Contact me if you need one. Right. I don't do any of that. All of my clients come from, it's inbound traffic. So I post valuable content for them.
And then LinkedIn tells me, hey, there's a new post from Deira that people are liking.
I do that and people read it and they think, wow, this is really good content. This will help me. And, you know, that helps establish my credibility. And so from there, that's typically when potential clients will message me. I'll talk to them a little, send them my rates. Some never reply. Some reply weeks later when they're ready. You know, some are like, okay, that's fine. And they are ready to pay right then. I heard, I can't remember where I heard this, probably one of the writers groups that I'm in, but I think 50% of people should decline because of your prices. That's how you know you're charging enough. If everybody is saying okay, then you're probably not charging enough, because that means that they're going with you because you're the cheapest. It doesn't bother me anymore now if I send rates to someone and they're like, all right, I'll get back to you, and they never get back to me. It's fine.
Yeah. And that's about them. It's not about you and your value. And that's something too, I think some of us need to get past, is, you know, it's not about how valuable we are. It's about whatever's going on in that person's life.
Right. Exactly.
It's just kind of like when we create that amazing lesson and some kid says, this is the dumbest thing ever. It wasn't, because it really was. And it's not something against you personally. It's whatever's going on with that kid.
Exactly. That's kind of my viewpoint now as far as getting clients. And plus, I love the marketing part. So I love thinking of content to post on LinkedIn. Like, I love all of that. That's honestly my favorite part.
Yes.
So, yeah. So that's how I get clients there. Just, you know, if you want me to do it for you, reach out to me. I don't think it's very helpful to just do cold pitches to people. Just, hey, all right, resumes. Right. Here are my services. I see some people do that, and it probably works sometimes, but I don't, it just doesn't fit my personality.
You kind of have to pre-sell. So you put, you know, some valuable content out there, and people see that you know what you're talking about, and then you kind of warm them up.
Exactly. And I can put my whole resume process out there, and someone can, you know, try to do it on their own, but that doesn't mean that they can do it like how I can. And so that's why I'm able to post valuable content for teachers, because I know that those who have the time to do it, they can. And that's good, because I really do want to help them. But at the same time, some people are going to look at what I post and say, oh, no, I'm not doing all of this. And that's when they message me.
Absolutely. So if there's, you know, a teacher out there who's thinking, I want to, you know, start my own business, whether it's copywriting or resume writing or doing something else, you know, that kind of takes something that they are good at, something that they have to offer, and are trying to figure out, okay, how do I turn this into a business? What is your advice to them? What can they do?
My advice would be to follow people on LinkedIn who are doing the same thing, because they are also going to be posting valuable content, and kind of just pick up on, okay, what kind of things are they posting about? What kind of products and services do they offer? This is all considered research. No one is doing anything, you know, brand new. And you don't have to spend your time trying to figure out, okay, what can I do that's never, ever, ever been done before? You don't have to do that, because like I said before, they can't do it like you. And so you can use LinkedIn to research and connect with others. I would say really build up a platform on there, depending on what kind of business you're trying to start. If it's more crafts and things like that, then you might want to lean more towards Pinterest or use TikTok to build up your community. Yeah. But building a community is really the way that people are able to have successful businesses nowadays, providing value first to establish that credibility. Yeah. So I would say that would be the first thing. Start posting things to show that you're credible, that you know what you're doing. And people will start to ask questions, and they'll show an interest. And it'll also let you know if there are enough people interested in that product or service to fully pursue it.
And that's something you have to be willing to do, is look, take a hard look at what you're doing. And, you know, if you're making an offer and absolutely nobody is interested whatsoever, then maybe you need to change that offer somehow.
Exactly.
So we've talked about building a community on LinkedIn or Pinterest or Facebook or wherever. One of the things that I wanted to throw in is that it's important to bring that community back to your own site, and to have like a mailing list that they can sign up for, maybe a lead magnet, you know, that you can offer. You know, if your LinkedIn profile goes bzz and it's gone,
right.
Or, you know, Facebook, or maybe, you know, that platform goes the way of MySpace or something, then you still have those connections with your community.
Right. That's what I'm working on now. I launched my website, EdTech Spotlight, which gives me an opportunity to write about EdTech companies. These are companies that I reach out to that I want to write about, because they're doing something that's really different in education. It also serves as kind of a portfolio for me. So if companies reach out to me, or I reach out to them about paid work, I can send them my website and they can see, oh, this is her writing style. This is the kind of things that she's good at writing about. I also have another section on there where I provide tips and advice for teachers who are transitioning as well. So I'm working on it.
So you're kind of covering two sides of that market. Right. So the ed tech company itself, plus the people that they're trying to get the attention of and who are trying to find them as mm-hmm. well. So you're just kind of in a sweet spot there. It sounds like I am. So if you, we've talked about the ed tech companies needing copywriting. We've talked about the teachers who are transitioning into a job with an ed tech company who need resumes. What advice would you have for teachers who maybe want to start their own ed tech company or their own, you know, online publishing company?
Honestly, since I've never started an ed tech company, I don't even know that I can give advice on how to start an ed tech company. That might be a little beyond me. I would say working for one first would probably be good. Just thinking from my perspective and not knowing how to start an ed tech company, because even though I'm interested in ed tech, I don't have a tech background as far as like coding and all right. of that. The technical knowledge I don't have.
From a business perspective.
Yeah. First thing they would need to do is think about who they would want to reach with the company, their target market for it, because, mm-hmm. you know, there's e-learning that isn't necessarily K-12, like Coursera and LinkedIn mm-hmm. Learning, those are e-learning, but it's not targeting children. So are you targeting children, adults? Is it a platform to help companies teach their employees? Does it help teachers do their jobs better? Does it help parents? So I think figuring out who it is you want to target and then talking to those people to figure out what their problems are and then decide how you can solve it with your business.
That's the key right there, is getting to know your target market so that you know what problems they have and what kind of solutions they need. And of course, you also need to research your competition so right. you know what solutions are already out there. So you're not doing just the same old thing. So what is the most important advice or the biggest advice that you would like to offer to teachers who are looking at getting out of the classroom and either, you know, getting that job or starting their own company?
I would say spend time gaining new skills, because although teachers do have transferable skills, that doesn't mean that you're 100% qualified or prepared to do all of these other jobs. For example, one of my close friends, she's a teacher and she wants to be a nurse. She can't just go right to being a nurse. If, you know, she could apply for nursing positions and show, you know, I have these transferable skills, I've worked with people, I'm nurturing, she can say all of that. But if she doesn't have those hard skills that are needed to be a nurse, aside from the certification that she needs, then she's not going to get that job. And so I think teachers also have to be realistic about what they know and what they still need to learn and work on learning that. Because yes, you've been a teacher, but that doesn't mean that you know how to use the tools for instructional design. They don't know how to use the CRMs for sales. And, you know, it's not that it's unattainable knowledge, but if you don't show any effort that you're trying to learn and that you recognize that there is going to be a gap between what you know and what you need to know, I don't think that'll come off well to an employer. I think it'll look like, okay, this teacher thinks that they know everything, they're unteachable. Okay, if you see Salesforce is used in a lot of customer success management positions, go ahead and learn how to use Salesforce as opposed to waiting until you get a job mm-hmm. and then having to learn. Like, bring something else to the table in addition to your teaching experience, because you're competing with thousands of other teachers with the same kind of experience.
So find, you know, some way to set yourself apart, or, you know, if you're looking into an ed tech company and, you know, maybe you've been computer teacher or something, but maybe you also were that liaison or that director of technology or something for your school, where you were that liaison between other ed tech companies and, you know, your school, that you would have a unique perspective. So that you know that technology from the other end, the customer end, and you could bring value to the ed tech company in that respect, for example.
Yes. And I also tell teachers to create experiences where they are. So if you're the kind of teacher who, and there's nothing wrong with this, but let's say that you plan, provide instruction, you go home. Mm-hmm. If that's what you do, that's fine. But if you're looking to go into another field, you're going to have to do something extra that you can put on your resume, because that's good. And it takes a lot of skill to do the basic teacher responsibilities. But planning an event will give you experience that can go on your resume. Planning a fundraiser will give you experience to go on your resume. Leading professional development. All of these different things show that you can work with adults, mm-hmm. and those will look good to employers versus only teaching children. So if you're in the classroom now and you're job searching, you might as well use that time to your advantage as well by creating these experiences for yourself to make yourself a stronger candidate.
And that's kind of one of the reasons that I started my publishing company, not necessarily with the idea of getting a job after I got out of teaching, but it was basically taking a leadership role within my context and working with adults and creating a resource that could serve and teach adults. And then, you know, transition that into something where I was earning an income from it. And then now that I've stepped out of the classroom, I can more easily step into that role as an entrepreneur.
Right.
And so if you're in a classroom and like you said, you know, that's all you're doing, figure out, you know, where else you would like to go and start following that now as much as you can, learning about it, researching about it, getting your feet wet as much as possible within your context. And then that way, when it is time for you to step out of the classroom, then you'll have something to step into.
Right. It's basically, like I always say, doing something your future self will thank you for.
Yes. And I love that. Thank you so much for your time. You had some really great advice. I really appreciate you being here with us today.
I really enjoyed it. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
You know something needs to change. Your comfort zone is shrinking, but you need a roadmap to get out. You want to start a business or achieve that goal you always wanted? But what can you do? Rethink Your Lifestyle can help you find the answers. Our Get Out of Your Comfort Zone online course will help you plan and chart your journey out of that comfort zone and into a new, happier you. Learn how you can take action and rewrite your story at rethinkyourlifestyle.com/comfortzonecourse.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Rethink Your Lifestyle podcast, where you learn how to be your own boss. Have questions about starting, growing, or scaling your business? You can ask us anything. Just fill out the form at www.rethinkyourlifestyle.com/askmeanything, and Michelle will answer your burning entrepreneurial questions in an upcoming episode. Also, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. We'll catch you next time.